Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. Seth Merrow in the studio. Thanks for joining us. Let me remind you that if you'd like to, you can come on down here and enjoy all the racing action and all the football action, as always, on an NFL Sunday here at the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. So keep that in mind. Also have to keep reminding you, coming up on Wednesday, it is the annual turkey giveaway, 8th annual, I believe, sponsored by Roddy Valente and family. Certainly appreciate their participation. They've been there right from the beginning. So Roddy and family, again, we tip our cap to you. You can see all the other sponsors there as well, providing the turkey and the fixins. Starting at 11, right here in our parking lot, 711 Central Avenue in Albany on Wednesday, the annual turkey giveaway. So again, keep that in mind also. All right, today's show, we'll do a little recap, some of the stakes action. We will also, a little bit later on, be joined by Jason Beam. He is the new announcer down at Tampa Bay Downs. They open up on Wednesday, so I thought we'd reach out to Jason, see how he's prepping for his new assignment, and just do a little preview of Tampa, one of my favorite tracks annually. I like the racing down there. I like the visit down there, too. I haven't been in a while. I have to arrange a Tampa Bay Downs visit sooner rather than later. But Jason Beam will join us a little bit later on as well. All right. Get to some of the racing action. And I am just looking. Should I be talking in my ear?
Do you hear anybody?
I do hear something in the background.
Think we have a special guest?
Somehow I think I know who the special guest is, but I hear in my ear. So I will now bring in the special guest. I'm assuming it's the special guest is going to jump into gloat.
The special guest is the hoodoo, the great historic hoodoo. The hoodoo
you're
is
killing
back,
me.
Baby, from MacArthur Stadium, from Manly Fieldhouse, the maroon come to town. They vanquish the hapless orange. They ate the saltine warriors. They dipped it in chowder. It was glorious. Glorious.
You couldn't wait. You texted me immediately and said, oh, it's terrible we're not on the air on the radio show this week. So then you put this together with the guys in the control room just to get the gloat in. I texted you the Han Solo meme, though. Don't get cocky. It was 54 years. You got a little fluke win. Don't go crazy.
I'm just going to let that just go because it's just ridiculous. I love the reaction on Twitter where the Syracuse faithful talked about how humiliated they were. Humiliated.
I texted back to you. It was slightly humiliating from my era because I remember you guys reached 100 points yesterday, and I remember being in Manly Fieldhouse when Syracuse was playing Siena, of all teams, approaching the 100 mark, and people started chanting, free fries, because back in those days, the Manly Fieldhouse days, if Syracuse got 100 points, you went to the local Burger King, you got free fries. And so a defeat when somebody hits triple digits hurts extra.
Well, what do the fans get when the opposing team hits 100 points?
I think you guys got to go home and talk to your local Burger King into giving you free fries. You're getting nothing from us.
Well, Jim Boeheim should have to come out and wash everybody's car. I'll tell you, when I was writing for the Oneida Daily Dispatch and I covered that first year of the Big East when Syracuse went to the NIT final, and going into that Syracuse locker room on a regular basis, even when Syracuse would win, Boeheim was miserable. So I can only imagine. I would have loved to have gone back to my sports writer days for the Dispatch, so I could have been in that locker room and just to see that sour puss of his. Not only his, but the two kids of his. Did you see the thing I put up? Boeheim was a freshman.
Yeah.
When Colgate beat him last in 62.
John F. Kennedy, president. Boeheim, a freshman. And I have not looked. I usually pull up the next day the post game press conference, and I have not pulled it up yet. But they're available on YouTube, so you can revel in that as well. Because yeah, I'm sure you are exactly right. That to me, those post game press conferences are the worst of Jim Boeheim. I get the feeling he's a nice guy. He does that Coaches for Cancer thing out at Turning Stone every year, and I get the feeling that basically he may be a nice guy, but boy, not in those press conferences. And so yesterday, yeah, I'm sure was not pleasant.
Well, there's also some history that's probably not widely known. If you go back to that game in 1962, that actually was a situation where Syracuse tied the established record of Georgia Tech for the longest consecutive losing streak in major college history.
I saw that. That was
pretty amazing.
Yeah, but now a turnaround, and you know, they're still early. They're working out the kinks. The kicker is, and it was just kind of coincidentally, I just pulled it out of the drawer, but I was wearing my Syracuse tie yesterday, which obviously didn't help a bit.
Well, and you know, Tina and I it's funny. I pulled the game up. Colgate was in the process of beating Fordham in football. I've been watching that, so I switch over to the basketball game, and they're down like 16-2, and I was like, ugh. And so Tina says, "What's wrong?" I said they've come out flat against Syracuse. Well, then she and I went to the tractor parade, and as it happens, I put on a maroon sweater, and I came back, and they're not only are they up, they're embarrassing them. I mean, they toyed with them.
So the alumni attire worked for you, not for me. But
exactly.
I have to get on with the show now, but you brought it up. So I've let you gloat for now 10 minutes, so enough is enough. But you brought it up, you alluded to it. Just give us a little recap. Yes. I couldn't get out of here early enough. I had texted you earlier in the week. I want to get there to Greenwich for the lighted tractor parade some year, but they started so early. They started at 6:00. I can't wrap up here and get up there in time. But give us the recap of yesterday's lighted tractor parade.
It was the best yet. It really was the best yet. What's happening is, I think the people that you know that do the tractors and they set up the parade floats, they're learning more and more tricks about how to use the generators. It was a spectacular thing. I mean, really intricate, layouts of the lights and music. There was one, like a flatbed that they had a bonfire going and they were roasting marshmallows on the flatbed. It was really, really fun. There was one sort of a crop, watering device that was basically turned into a snowmaking machine, and the thing is going down Main Street, going down Route 29, blowing snow everywhere. You could have brought your cross country skis. It was hysterical. It was wonderful. We must have had when I tell you there were people arriving 3 hours, 4 hours ahead of time. By like 2:00, people were setting up chairs, and there was all kinds of activity in the village. I mean, this thing has become a huge success. There must have been 15,000 people here. And, of course, Friday night, one of the other highlights, the Greenwich Witches, the Central School football team, is the sectional champ in Class D. They're headed to the semifinals. And then they're going to go into the Dome and win.
You are on a roll. tied it into the Dome. But, the Lady Tractor Parade, I have to get up there. It just sounds just so incredible. But, again, I got to get back to the show, but I've given you now 12
get
minutes.
Get back to the show.
12 minutes to gloat. So, congratulations. We'll start our next 54-year streak next season.
We'll see about that. The worm is turned in Central New York. The new power is in the Shenango Valley, baby. You bet. Steve. Even Vitale, Dick Vitale, they let him out of the hospital, and he declared it Upset City, baby.
Steve Vick, Colgate grad, coming in this morning to gloat. Thanks for the visit. We will talk again. We'll catch you on the radio show in a couple of weeks.
Well, a couple of weeks. I'm off this week, and wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving. Seth will take you all through this week, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Sounds good. Steve, thanks for the – well, kind of thanks for the call.
Thanks.
Steve Vick, as I said, Colgate graduate. And I knew the guy said, hey, put your earpiece in. And I said, why am I – because I didn't have a phone call until later in the show. And I immediately thought, oh, okay, something is up here. And I kind of figured it out after the series of texts last night. But, yeah, you get to gloat when you win. So we gave him 12 minutes. All right, let's watch a couple of replays before we pull Jason Beam into the program. We'll start things out at Aqueduct yesterday in the Red Smith. And I like to serve the king. Went off as the 2-1 favorite. I thought a little bit generous given the triple digit buyer last time. But it was a competitive field. But Serve the King, it had to work. Channel Cat, the 6-year-old, I had that one in the mix as well. Channel Cat, the number 7 horse, kind of tries to take him all the way around. And Serve the King really has to work. Serve the King's the number 4 horse. And you can see here, it's going to be a tough road to hoe, but finally gets the momentum going, and you're still not sure even at this point, is he going to get up, and chart margin and neck, Channel Cat, a neck over Soldier Rising with no word running fourth, but Serve the King getting it done for Chad Brown. Peter Brandt, Irod Ortiz was on board. It was a nice performance from that one. Again, coming off the triple digit buyer, second place finish last time behind Rock Emperor in the Turf Classic. So down in New York, nice, you know, one of the last of the, well, now I have to look. I was going to say one of the last of the Turf Stakes. It may have been, graded Turf Stakes, but we will see now. There aren't many. If there are a few, there certainly aren't many graded Turf Stakes left in the New York season. Down at Churchill, this one, had, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to pull it up now because I had the stats earlier. Joel Rosario, this was the Chalukyi had a little side story with Joel Rosario, who is chasing the graded stakes. Here we go. This was going into yesterday. Joel Rosario is chasing the stakes wins record and the graded stakes wins record. So going into yesterday, Joel Rosario, for this is an annual, Joel Rosario had 68, and the all-time stakes winner for a year was Garrett Gomez with 76. So Joel Rosario 8 back with, you know, a month and a week and a half left or so. So can he get 8? Well, he got a chance at Churchill yesterday to add 1. Not only to stakes overall, but yesterday's Chalukyi was a grade 3, and he's also chasing, Joel Rosario chasing the graded stakes wins. The all-time record there is 55. Joel Rosario currently going into yesterday sitting at 48. So Joel Rosario was on board, obligatory for Bill Mott yesterday. 2 races back, pretty good second in the Cotillion, then followed that up in the Raven Run. Was a little bit disappointing in there. Stepped in, it was the first time against Older yesterday, and obligatory gets it done, and gets it done pretty nicely. Obligatory is a little bit of a Jekyll and Hyde, a little bit inconsistent. Not yesterday, though. This was a really solid effort. Obligatory, the number 7, Matera, the number 3, and Miss Bigley, the number 4. again, Obligatory number 7 went off as the 3-2 favorite. I was slightly surprised with that. Not super surprised, but I thought perhaps Miss Bigley would vie for favoritism. Again, this was Obligatory stepping in against Older for the first time and being a little bit inconsistent overall. But, I mean, she's been facing some of the best on the 3-year-old scene. Clairiere, Bella Sophia, Search Results in 3 of the last 4 races. And it kind of showed here. She was a little class edge, but it also maybe flattered a little bit those nice 3-year-old fillies. Speaking of Clairiere, I didn't pull up the replay, but Lacrete yesterday, first-time starter from the Clairiere connections, Steve Asmussen and Stone Street, sibling to Clairiere. Clairiere debuted last October, so a little over a year ago, mile and a 16th at Churchill. Clairiere won. Mile and a 16th, tough distance to debut at. Her sibling debuted yesterday at a mile and a 16th for the same connections, Asmussen and Stone Street, and looked pretty good winning. So that Lacrete, maybe Travis Stone was saying Lacrete, so I will kind of tilt towards his pronunciation probably being more correct. But regardless of how it's pronounced, keep your eyes on that one, the sibling to Leclerier. Leclerier subsequently ran second in, I think, the Goldenrod, then took a couple months off, won a stake down at the Fairgrounds in her third career start. We'll see if the younger sibling from yesterday can do the same. I was going to take a look at the native diver from Del Mar, but we'll skip that. I'll just let you know that Azul Coast won for Bob Baffert. The favorite was eight rings at even money. Winds up, excuse me, a little bit of a disappointing third. And I'm just skipping that because I did want to give you a little preview of some of the action that is coming up over the next couple of days. And I'm just looking for my where I actually put the notes for all of that. And maybe I'll wrap up because I don't see where I had. Oh, I know exactly where I have the notes, right here. So I just want to give you, again, a little preview of some of the things that are coming up the next couple of days, because at Mahoning Valley tomorrow, it's Thanksgiving week. Thanksgiving week's always a little bit special. Mahoning Valley tomorrow, there's a nice steak, and then at Zia Park on Tuesday, nice action. So keep your ears to the ground on Monday and Tuesday. If you don't normally tune in tomorrow, Mahoning Valley, the Steel Valley Sprint, $250,000 up for grabs. Baby Yoda, and we may have the replay of Baby Yoda with that incredible, yeah, here it is, the incredible victory up at Saratoga September 4th. Big win, a 114 buyer, just phenomenal number. Follows that up with a disappointing third, however, in the Vosburg. We'll see what Baby Yoda can do on Monday, tomorrow, at Mahoning Valley. Again, there's $250,000 up for grabs, so they got a nice full field of 12. Jackson Traveler from West Point, Steve Asmussen, also showing up, but it's going to be very interesting to see what Baby Yoda can do. Coming up on Tuesday, Zia Park Derby, there's a number of stakes races, but the Zia Park Derby and the Zia Park Oaks will be run on Tuesday. The Zia Park Derby, and I think we have the replay here, excuse me, of Superstock in the Arkansas Derby. And so off of that, 1-5 on the morning line in a short field of 5, and he probably does have a class edge. Won the Arkansas Derby, disappointed in the Kentucky Derby, Texas Derby, and the Iowa Derby, ran fourth in both of those, but won the Ellis Park Derby, and then last time out was third in the Oklahoma Derby. So again, I just think overall this horse may outclass this bunch on Tuesday in the Zia Park Derby. Again, $250,000 up for grabs. Asmussen bringing in that Arkansas Derby winner, Superstock. And in the Zia Park Oaks, Asmussen also looks a little bit intriguing. And I went back to Oaklawn for a replay from this one too. Pauline's Pearl won the Fantasy back on April 3rd at Oaklawn Park. Subsequently, last couple of starts has run decently in the Charlestown Oaks and the Remington Park Oaks. 9-5 versus a field of 6 in here versus 5 others. Not quite the favorite that Superstock is, but again, might outclass them. I mean, it looks like Asmussen has a couple of live runners there, the Zia Park Derby and Zia Park Oaks. But again, I just wanted to alert you because you don't normally see $250,000 stakes floating around on Mondays and Tuesdays, but on this Thanksgiving week, Mahoning tomorrow, Zia on Tuesday, nice stakes action to maybe pay a little bit of attention to. All right, speaking of paying attention to, coming up a little bit later this week on Wednesday, opening day at Tampa. I love Tampa. I love Tampa racing. Love the turf racing down there. Thought we'd reach out and talk a little bit about Tampa, get a little preview of the meet with our friend Jason Beam. He'll be the new announcer down at Tampa. All of that right after this. Stay tuned.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the clubhouse racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
We had started it 2 years ago, and to me it's a privilege to be able to do this, and I mean that sincerely. And we see the need for it more and more. And when you do see the people that are in line for the turkeys, it makes it all well worth it.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. As promised before the break, we are joined now by the new track announcer down at Tampa, Jason Beam. Jason, good morning.
Seth, good morning. It's good to be with you guys.
Yeah, happy to have you on board. Again, I wanted to preview Tampa a little bit, but also plug you in to talk a little bit about the new gig. But I say new gig, you're in for a long time track announcer, Rich Grunder. And I always liked Rich because when I heard his voice, I would think of the years I would go down to Florida. My father was retired right in that area, so I would spend some time down there. And Rich Grunder's voice always reminded me of short sleeves and shorts and sandals in February. So I always appreciated that. But longtime track announcer down there, Rich Grunder, retired. You stepped in. Now, it's a new gig for you, but I'm reasonably certain. Didn't you cover that quirky 2 days they have to do in the summer due to, I think it's simulcast laws down there?
Yeah, I did. And actually, I'm really glad that it kind of worked out that way because it gave me a couple of days to at least, get some comfort in the booth. And, the booth is different as they are in every track. Sometimes you're a lot higher. Sometimes you're a lot lower. The angles are just different. So it feels different calling a race. And I feel much less nervous than I probably would have if I didn't have those 2 days just to get a sense of the place and calling races down here. So I'll be nervous once opening day comes, but for now I'm doing all right.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that if it gave you a little head start. That's interesting. And am I right? A 7-furlong race, isn't that a little quirky down there with some of the palm trees?
I can't tell you yet because we had a 6.5 those summer days, but I know on opening day there is one. I was just looking. I'm sitting in the booth right now actually kind of getting things set up, and I did look down there. I can see the back fence, so it's obstructed, but it's not totally obstructed. I actually had the same thing when I was filling in at Gulfstream Park West, the artist formerly known as Calder. They used to have kind of the same thing. There was a huge tree right at the 7/8 pole, and I remember there was a 6-horse race, and I'd see them leave because you could see some of their feet, and so I would hold off on doing my start call just because I wanted to stall a little bit. And I remember one race, I said, and the race is on, and all of a sudden five of them came out. And I was like, oh, no, who's not there? And so, that kind of stuff is tricky, and there's little things like that at almost every track. Grants Pass, I have to sit down because the overhang blocks the far turn if I don't. So it's, they all kind of have their little niches, I guess.
I'll ask you as an announcer, have you ever been, I'm assuming you must have been in a situation, either because of that, an obstructed view on the backstretch with the start of a race or something, or situations on inclement weather kind of situations. Do you ever go back and forth and rely on the TV signal a little bit and then go back to the binoculars? And how difficult is that?
Well, it's funny you say that because the first race I called, if you go on YouTube, the first race of that summer 2 days, so my first race here ever, it was a complete washout. Like, you couldn't see the far turn. You could, I mean, you could vaguely make it out. And I had the window open, and so I was just getting poured on. But I try to never use the TV if I don't have to, just because, I don't know, for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
Just, for me, it's a thing. But also, I just think you, I don't know, I think you can miss stuff if you're off the TV. It depends. But you're going to miss stuff on the binoculars, too, because you're zoomed in so far. I try to tell this to people on Twitter. They'll get mad at announcers like, oh, he didn't see that horse check at the back. It's like, well, yeah, he was at the front. Like, you can't call what you don't see. And so, you know, that weather stuff, yeah, that happens not infrequently. Because Colonial, it, you know, we get those thunder showers over there and forget about it. And my window is kind of a flat window and it's exposed. Here I have an awning. So if it rains, I don't get water running down the window. But Colonial, there was a few races where you just couldn't see. And so I could open the window and hang out the window, but even that is, you know, is a little bit tough. So it certainly happens. In fact, Gabe Pruitt posted a picture the other day on his Twitter. He was pulling in a Gulfstream, and, you know, same thing. Like, the window is just a complete wash. You can't see anything.
Out of all the time I've talked to announcers, I have never thought of that, because obviously we've all been in the situation when you're in your car and you couldn't drive around without windshield wipers, but I've never thought about the booth with an unobstructed access to rain. You could wind up with you know, your windshield, so to speak, in the announcer's booth being covered with water.
Yeah, there's a lot. It goes back to, I mean, every booth and window is different. And like I said, Colonial, I can open the window, but there's kind of a little desk in front of me, so like it's just not easy to do. But like Gulfstream and I think Indiana Grand, I've seen Bill Downs post pictures, you know, same thing. He can't open his window. So if it's just a wash, you have to use the TV or, you know, something else.
Yeah.
You're just kind of, and it's nerve wracking when that happens, because, you know, we're all creatures of habit and you kind of have your, you know, your set way of doing things. But Colonial, I got tested a few times this year with the rain, and, you know, you just kind of make do.
So fill us in. Again, you had a couple days down there in the summertime, then you were bouncing around to your other gigs, Colonial, Grants Pass Downs and whatnot, but now you're down there at Tampa, and I'm totally envious. As I say, there were a number of years where my father was retired, and he was down in Bradenton, which is 45 minutes or an hour south, so I would visit him, and sometimes I'd be there for a couple of weeks visiting, but I'd always get up for a stop or two to Tampa Bay Downs, really enjoy the trek. But I am envious of you. Here it is, November, and you're going to go right through the winter months down there at Tampa. Are you excited?
I was. I told my mom this. I said, I realized that, like, the only kind of cold weather I'm going to get is maybe those last couple weeks at Grants Pass in November. But other than that, it's almost like eternal spring and summer. But it's been amazing so far, because I drove down from Oregon, and, you know, most of the way across the country this time I had pretty pleasant weather, but it was chilly in a number of spots. And then you get here and, you know, I wake up and I go take my morning walk first thing, and it's, you know, I can wear shorts and t-shirt, and it's just weird, especially coming from Seattle, where November is like the rain month. Like, it just never stops up there. So yeah, I feel a little bit spoiled in that sense, for sure.
Like I say, I'm completely envious. Give us a little update. I got a press release in the email box a couple of days ago. It looks like they've kind of freshened things up down there with a new paint job, and folks who are visiting. The snowbirds from around here who, like me, still get the like me a few years ago, but they still get the opportunity to go down. It looks like they'll get a new kind of freshened facility when they visit this year.
Yeah, I might be a bad gauge on that, because I really haven't seen it other than how it is now. So, but no, the place looks great. You know, they've been I've been coming in each morning just for a few hours to, you know, just hang out and, you know, doing a little bit of work and stuff, but. The place looks great. I mean, it's clean, and they added a lot of just signage. You know, the summer meet, it's obviously, like you said, it's kind of this weird two-day thing, but everybody seems to get ready. The TV guys are just talking with them, and they're getting all their cameras adjusted. So it's these last few days before a racetrack opens, you know, everybody's kind of nonstop, and inevitably something goes goofy on opening day. I've been a part of very few opening days where something wasn't a little haywire, but hopefully it's smooth. And the entries came out yesterday, and they'll have the morning line and everything up by tonight. And I think 9 in the first race, and everything else is 10 or more. So the horsemen really responded at the entry box for Wednesday's opener.
So people can pull up the PPs and start handicapping. As I said, I really enjoy the Tampa racing, love the turf racing there. And it's become fun, particularly over the past few years, because some of the prominent outfits take advantage of that turf course. Chad Brown has sent some horses over. It was fairly recently, within the last couple of 3 years, Got Stormy was over there for Mark Cassie over the winter. So the trainers certainly take advantage of that. The trainers we're familiar with up here in New York. I'm curious, had things kind of settled out as to who the trainers will be to watch down there and jockeys? And I bring up the jockeys because I think over the past few years, and I just pulled up Equibase earlier this morning, the names really over the past few years, Camacho, Gallardo, Dan Santino. Can we expect some of those familiar names back this year?
Yeah, a lot of those guys are, you know, I had my little jockey list here, Seth, and I now it's not on my door. I will say from a personal standpoint, I'm very excited. Rocco Bowen's coming down, who's a guy I actually call Portland Meadows, and he became kind of the kingpin at Emerald for a while, and he had a nice summer up in Indiana and Churchill and stuff this year. So he's coming down for the winter. But, yeah, a lot of those same names, Sammy Camacho, Gallardo, Castanon, Feliciano, and there's, Mike Allen, they're all kind of back down to, as far as I can tell. And Gerald Bennett, I know the perennial leading trainers, I think he's three away from 4,000 career wins. So that'll, I would assume, happen pretty quick.
Oh, wow. That's certainly a milestone to pay attention to. So, again, just wanted to get you on to kind of preview the meet. Opens up on Wednesday, and we will check in as as the meet goes along, certainly, because, as I say, I really enjoy the meet. Tampa Bay Derby is always a lot of fun, but there's a nice lead up to that and some good racing afterwards as well with some sire stakes, Florida sires races and whatnot. But before I let you go, I have to change the topic just a little bit. You've already alluded to it, your coverage of Grants Pass Downs. I showed it last week or whenever it happened. I think it was last week where I showed it on the show just because it was so quirky. You now have one of the all-time great announcer stories with the lights going out at Grants Pass Downs. It didn't just go out. The last day, the last race of the meet, that was the wildest thing I ever saw there. The race subsequently declared a no contest, but what was that like in the booth?
It was, honestly, it was scary because, obviously, I mean, it wasn't the, our lights up in the booth were still on. So, obviously I knew the power didn't go out completely, but you could not, there was no moonlight. I mean, it was just dark. And when the leader came out, I kind of breathed a little sigh of relief. And then a couple of horses came out with no riders and it just went from, odd to scary really, really quick. And luckily, there weren't any real serious injuries. I think one jockey broke a bone in his foot, Patrick Henry, but the other rider that was unseated was fine. And I was told after the fact that horses actually see pretty well in the dark. That wasn't something I was aware of. And so hopefully that was, helped the cause because it was a scary deal.
No, because then we showed the replay and the tote board. Oh, the guys are pulling up the replay here and you'll be able to see it. The lights all of a sudden go out. But then the tote board was still lit, and so you could see in the the light of the tote board the horses come by subsequently. And yeah, the word after the race was that everybody came out relatively unscathed, which was good news. But as I say, that was one of the weirdest situations I've ever seen. So you've got now one of the weirder racetrack announcer stories to plug into your resume there. But hopefully, you don't have to worry about it. I was going to say hopefully more light down in Tampa, but I will say hopefully more sunlight down there because we're hoping for plenty of sunny days as opposed to cloudy days down there. And I think that will be the case because it normally is. As I say, I'm very envious. Jason, we appreciate the visit. And as I say, we will check in again as the meet progresses.
All right, sounds good, Seth. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Jason Beam from Tampa Bay Downs. Again, opening on Wednesday. Thursday, Fairgrounds opens up. So we're transitioning into that winter meet kind of mode at this time of year as we normally do. And Oaklawn is, 3 weeks down, 4 weeks down now? Because they open up earlier this year as well. So as I say, we're in that transition period from the summer fall tracks to the fall winter tracks now. And Tampa kicking off on Wednesday. All right, I see the pregame show for NYRA has kicked off. So again, little abbreviated edition of Racing Across America. So we can get to the pregame show. I will be back in, about an hour or so with OTB Live for a Sunday afternoon. NYRA kicking off today at 11:50. Keep that in mind. And I keep reminding you, they are now kind of bouncing back and forth, 11:50 and 12:20, based on the number of races that are running that day. So just plug in and double-check your post times if you like to play that early pick five, early pick four. in New York down at Aqueduct. Just make sure you got the post time plugged in and you don't miss the early races. But it's 11:50 today. As I say, I'll be back in about an hour with OTB Live for a Sunday afternoon. Thanks for tuning in this morning. We'll see you shortly.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.